check. So, how was it?
We kind of changed our gears today a little bit. I wanted to go back to what we did a long, long time ago. And that is also kind of a benefit to you since you haven't come in the past. So, and you too. So, and then this revision will help us now get into the subject of consciousness, which we are starting to discuss. So the key thing in mental development are those four elements. And we need those to understand the subtle subject of mind and consciousness. So, let's talk about what is the difference between mindfulness and concentration. It might be a revision for some of you, but basically, I'm just using an analogy here. So let's say you're cutting this wood, right? So there are two things involved when we are cutting something. You have this back and forth motion, right? Then there's another thing. You have to do this at one single point. If you do this here, 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 back and forth, there's no efficiency in there, right? So one is moving it back and forth, meaning being aware of that. Second is moving it at that one single location. All right? So this back and forth movement is related to mindfulness. So your breath is coming in, going out, coming in, going out. You're mindful of that. So that's one thing. Second is, you're concentrating on its sensation, which is arising at one point. Right? So, mindfulness combined with concentration brings efficiency. Then you will so quickly, easily, profitably cut this wood because you are aware of this and you're also aware of this. Right? Same principle, we can apply anything in all aspects of our life. Whether it is your quality control issue or your software bug solving issue or designing a new product or building a house or even dealing with children or resolving a family matter. Everything. We have to have a broader picture and a focused picture, right? We always say, no, let's look at the big picture that is related to mindfulness. Let's focus on what is at the core that is related to concentration. Like this house, for example. An architect has to have a broader picture so that he can design the elevation and the setting and everything. But an engineer, like a structural engineer or a foundation engineer, has to have a smaller picture, meaning how much force is in that column, how much tension is in that beam, how much size of the footing. He's looking at a subtler picture. And an architect is looking at a broader picture. And together, you create this product. And the houses which doesn't have good design, meaning structural design, will fail. And there are so many lawsuits out there. You must have heard about construction defect law and how many millions of dollars were spent on failures in the houses. So now, if the architect designs without thinking about a subtler picture, then he will design anything wild, and then it may not be buildable, you see? It may not be cost-effective. That's why I use the word profitability. Concentration brings profitability in our action. Mindfulness brings efficiency and effectiveness. You can apply that to your software problem, and through experience we can understand this better. So now the subject of consciousness, mind, is similar. We can't understand it unless we have these four elements. For example, why is it non-reaction? I'm cutting this wood, it's just not going right. Then I react and give up, right? Or you're not able to achieve your quality criteria, then you give up. Or you cannot fix your bug, then you just simply give up, right? That means we are reacting to the circumstance. We have to not only have those two faculties, but also have non-reaction. We constantly perceive it with persistence, you know, patience, forbearance. That's the element of non-reaction. Same with if you're dealing with children, you know, we will find out a broader picture, what's going on, then a subtler picture, what is going on, and then applying non-reaction, meaning constantly working with it, not giving up, constantly trying again and again. And then why the tension is, as we're applying everything, we're also trying to understand what is ultimately happening. What is the undercurrent of all phenomena? Right? As you are becoming mindful of that breath, in and out, then there is that moment of enlightenment. Oh, the breath is impermanent. It just comes and goes. As your mindfulness of your thoughts, they are coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. Oh, thoughts are impermanent. They just come and go. Why should I cling to them? Why should I get attached to my thoughts? All our suffering happens because we get clung, we cling on to our thoughts. That's how depression occurs, that's how similarly conceit occurs, pride occurs. All mental diseases occur because we cling on to thoughts, thinking that they are our thoughts and thinking that that's permanent. I mean, that's what there is. That also takes care of remorse and guilt, and we will talk about that some other time. But that, why the tension? So first is learning that there is impermanence underlying everything. And secondly, learning that there is impersonality underlying everything. And we touched that subject last weekend, how there is impersonality underlying all phenomena. So two things, impermanence and impersonality. When we understand those, when we're constantly abiding in that wise attention, we slowly eradicate the ego, slowly eradicate the sense of self, pride. So, now we will apply these four elements to understand consciousness, to understand mind. And consciousness is the subject matter where you have to have a panoramic vision, you know, a cosmic vision, and you have to have quantum vision. Meaning, you need a telescope as well as microscope. Telescope means mindfulness, concentration means microscope. Then there is no confusion. Then there is, it's called clear comprehension. And that applies to everything. If we want clear comprehension, if we want minimum probability for error, then we have to apply both mindfulness and concentration. Everything. Whatever it, that subject matter may be. So we need that telescope to understand the universe. And we need the microscope to understand the quantum mechanics of consciousness and mind. What is happening at the subtlest level? What are the elements of mind? What are the different types of consciousness? How they interact? At the same time, we need to understand the universal picture. Like in the science community, and you must have heard about the unified field theory or the gut grand unified theory. or all the entire science community trying to understand what is this universe we live in, who we are, right? And it's a group of people, it's a group of disciplines. You need astronomers, at the same time you need theoretical physicists. And together they're trying to figure out who we are, who we really are, you know. So a telescope and a microscope working together to try to understand the ultimate truth. And we're training for that here.
It's an interesting thought process.
What do you think, sir?
Interesting perspective on non-reaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's, the way you explained it, it's more like persistence rather than inaction.
Right. Correct. There is action, there is non-reaction, there is inaction, there is proaction. Non-reaction doesn't mean inaction, it means proaction. That element of persistence you are talking about is really proaction.
Still need more clarity on wise attention.
That's a good one, right? Because that's the subtlest part. That is how we develop our intelligence. The faculty of wise attention is directly related to development of intelligence. What is intelligence? The mental ability of consciousness. So, there is one thing where you are simply observing the breath, or you are simply chanting a mantra, or you are simply following any meditative practice. That's one thing. That will only bring momentary peace, or maybe some spiritual entertainment, or maybe a feeling good effect. But is it developing intelligence? Is it making us wise? You see, there are probably 10,000 meditative techniques, right? And I cannot comment on any of those because I haven't personally tried them for a long time. But here, what we're trying to do is we're not only trying to feel good, we're not only trying to develop physical well-being and mental well-being, but we're also trying to develop wisdom. We're trying to become wise, you see. Because ultimately, and I have repeated this many times, it is the wisdom which liberates us from all suffering, all imperfections.
When you are at peace, I think you can think better also.
Right.
It's a problem. Your mind is wandering all the time and then you're thinking so many things at the same time. But when you meditate or when you are calm or when you chant something, you're at peace.
Right.
I think then the brain can work better and then you can analyze the situation better.
Right. But it's an active phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen by itself.
You have to train yourself.
Train yourself. And how? This is how. So you are chanting a mantra or you're simply observing the breath. You're going to feel peaceful. But how we use that platform to develop intelligence, that's what we're talking about. It's not going to happen automatically. Just feeling peaceful is not going to lead to wisdom. It is an active parameter. We have to actually train for wisdom.
But when you practice every day, that's not going to happen. You're training yourself like an athlete, right? They practice every day, so eventually they get to that point. Same way as a human being, you meditate or you chant every day, kind of ritual.
The athlete won't become a perfect athlete or an Olympic winner unless he gives wise attention to what works, what doesn't work, how to breathe as you run. If you breathe this way, then you can run faster. If you have this diet, then you can have more stamina. So all those things he's observing, he's analyzing, he's contemplating, and that is the element of wise attention. If he just keeps running every day, maybe, there is a probability that he will become an Olympic winner, but that probably will take 10 years.
Okay.
So if, and again, I keep using the word efficiency, effectiveness, profitability. So the same athlete, if he wants to become an Olympic gold medalist in 1 year, then he better use, he apply these elements. You see what I'm saying? So we are constantly trying to improve our efficiency, effectiveness, profitability. Efficiency, effectiveness, profitability. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, that part that comes by listening, by reading, by talking to other people and then experiencing something in your life.
Absolutely.
It's not going to happen just like that. Even if you want to pay attention and concentrate, sometimes it takes longer time depending on the individual too.
Right, right. So, yeah, it's all a part of giving attention to everything. Like we are talking now, we'll have to give attention to it. Obviously, that means not accepting it right away, but analyzing it. Neither accepting nor rejecting, but simply analyzing, trying to figure out, you know, whether it is right or wrong. That's wise attention.
Mm-hmm.
Meditation is an active phenomenon. It's not passive, which some people might be thinking. That it simply should sit there, do nothing. No, it is highly active. What do you, ma'am?
Why don't care?
All right. Great. And the slides that you saw before we began, those slides will start making sense, and we can talk about those once we develop. You know, once we are anchored into these elements, because we need certain level of IQ, right, to understand. Anything you have to say?
I was just thinking, how would you achieve all these four factors in everything that you do every time, throughout the day?
That's a good question. In fact, meditation is something we can do all the time. All the time. Like right now, we are sitting, right? So are we aware of bodily sensations? Are we aware of how we are sitting? Are we aware of what we are saying? That's meditation. As long as these elements are present, you're actually meditating. We think that sitting in a cross-legged posture and eyes closed means meditation, then it's a completely wrong picture. If there is no mental development, there is no meditation.
A lot of times impulses and your thought process take over what you want to say or how you want to say it.
Right. Yeah, if I'm not aware, I could be just couching, you know. Or if, you know, I'm not aware, I can hurt others' feelings. I can criticize. And so that mindfulness of breath.
Ignorance.
Right, not knowing yourself. Mm-hmm. Not knowing what we are doing, saying, thinking, feeling. That mindfulness of breath, it's a mental faculty. Mindfulness is a mental phenomenon. Same thing when we walk out the door here today. It will automatically, you know, as you are driving, mindfulness will arise.
But most of the time we are selfish human beings. You concentrate on things, what is beneficial for you, what is going to help you, and sometimes we forget about how it's going to affect other people. That's where the wise attention comes.
All of the time.
Yeah, wise attention comes. Yeah. Okay, if I say something to you, how will you react when somebody else says that to you? We don't think about that. We simply just say things to other people without knowing how it's going to affect to your feelings.
Right. And here, because we are training for wise attention, we'll become aware of that.
Yes. So you're training your mind.
Exactly.
Sometimes that's not enough.
It's not always on the path. You know,
yes.
I mean, 10 times you may think, okay, right, I have to think in all direction and then say something. But it's not always like that. Anger, for example, we are not thinking.
Right. It's reactive. And as we train for non-reaction, the anger will go away. And because we are dealing with mind, it's not going to happen overnight.
Right.
Because
going anger away or things that, you know, that becomes a habit, how will it go away? You know, unless you practice every day.
Persistence, right. Persistence, forbearance.
Years, 40 years, it may even never go unless you really want to or willing to.
Well, it's get better and better.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's not going away. Our goal is not going away right now. It's getting better and better. Improvement.
Right.
Little bit is good.
And persistence. Persistence, forbearance, patience.
Endurance.
Just like you were sitting there, even you were, there was some discomfort in your knees, you're actually training for forbearance, patience, persistence. And it was applying.
Feelings, anger, they're going to come.
Right.
But how can you get better?
Right. Wouldn't there be a build-up if you don't let it out?
That's a good question, and we talked about that. Here we are learning neither to express nor to suppress. Expression means you let out the anger, like venting off the anger, which a lot of philosophers think is a good idea, which I think it is absolutely a bad idea. Because if you understand
the whole environment, one person gets angry though.
Right. Suppression is not getting anger, but feeling anger. You're keeping it inside. And to eliminate both, to eliminate expression and suppression, we have to get in touch with these sensations. That's precisely why we are learning to develop concentration on the touch of the breath. Because see, we have to understand how anger happens, or any mental phenomenon, or any reaction. We are not reacting to the outside environment. We are reacting to what is happening inside us. For example, you say something to me and it is critical. Before I actually get angry, what is happening is there's an unpleasant sensation inside. It's a sensation, it's a very subtle sensation. And I am reacting to that sensation, not to you. And that's why we have to learn to get in touch with our sensations. So if I had enough mindfulness and concentration, I would immediately notice that sensation in the body. The moment I notice it, and the beauty of mindfulness is the mindfulness along with it automatically pulls in other wholesome mental factors. And we'll talk about that someday, that how these things actually happen technically, mechanically, you know, quantum mechanically. So the moment there is mindfulness of that unpleasant sensation, and you observe that unpleasantness without reacting, then you will not get angry. You're simply observing it, then you will go away.
But you can simply say to that person, not angrily, you say, you know, you are saying that, but I don't like.
Sure,
you can say nicely, but I don't like the way you said that. If that person still doesn't listen or not apologize, you are not looking that person to apologize, but you can, that person is not accepting their fault, his fault. Then you can say, okay, we don't talk right now. When you calm down, we will talk later.
Right, that is there, and then there is higher stage.
Don't talk, but I am telling my, you can tell your own expression that, like, I don't like the way you are talking with me.
That is fine, but we are actually trying to go higher than that. We're trying to develop compassion and loving kindness. What that means is when somebody else is angry, we look at that person as somebody who is suffering. Anger is a mental disease, right? Just like somebody is suffering from flu, we generally don't get angry at a person who is suffering from something. For example, if you knew that I am suffering from terminal cancer, and if I get angry at you, it's highly unlikely that you will react to my anger. Because you will know that, oh, this guy is suffering, he's in pain. And so that what that does is it arises compassion. Then we can deal with other person's anger. And that's what we're learning here.
So you are saying like you just be quiet, don't say non-reaction and just don't say anything. But I'm saying like you don't have to show your anger, non-react. But other person also has to realize that.
Absolutely.
He's not sick, he's healthy, he just want to hurt your feelings. That person also has to realize that
you don't like that.
Absolutely. And the best way to do that is not when he is angry. Because when somebody is angry, there is no receptivity.
Yeah, don't give the response in anger, right. But nicely, you know, I don't like that. You want to talk about that, or we will talk about that later when you calm down.
At that time, the most important thing is arousing compassion. And compassion has an expansive quality. It engulfs the other person.
Like you say, there's some unwholesome mindset, something bad to your body.
Right.
So you realize that and say, I don't like that.
You go get hurt when there is action. Of course, there has to be reaction. But here we are trying to teach non-reaction.
No,
that is very, I higher level.
For other
people's
benefit, if you don't say anything,
we must.
That person not gonna learn. That person gonna come to you again and again and say bad things.
We
and
must
there's
say.
A limit.
No, we must say.
We must say nicely.
Nicely
with
and
compassion. Or so,
I think
you know,
probably the viewpoint is if he is angry, then he's suffering.
Suffering.
He or she is suffering.
Correct.
So treat them with compassion.
And say, we will talk later.
Probably won't happen again and again.
Right.
That's the viewpoint.
Not only it will engulf the other person in compassion, but later on when you send him an email or a note or any act of kindness, what you will write for him will transform that another person. So you're not abandoning another person. You're just improving your efficiency and effectiveness and profitability in changing that person without expressing or suppressing. Because if you get angry at me and if I don't react, but I suppress it, that means I'm really feeling bad and I'm really, reacting inside but not saying anything. That is called smartness. We're not becoming smart or clever. We're becoming wise. That's the difference here. There is no strategy here. You know, if somebody doesn't become angry like a CEO in a company or in the business environment, doesn't necessarily mean that person is wise. He's just handling a situation, but we are not for that. We are pursuing excellence, and excellence comes from wisdom, not from smartness, strategy, or cleverness. And that's why compassion is important. That's why equanimity is important. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alright.
It might be easy to practice in most, daily situations, but if someone inflicts pain, suffering on one of your loved ones, I wouldn't know how to, treat them with compassion.
It will come. If there is a foundation of loving kindness and compassion, we become creative. And trust me, and this one I'm not saying believe or don't believe, I'm saying trust me in this, that there is creativity. Meaning if there is somebody holding a gun at your, and then he's saying dodge it, you'll be creative enough to neither get hurt yourself nor get the other person hurt. Or you're saying somebody is holding your child at a gunpoint. How are you going to arouse compassion? And what I'm saying is, trust me that if you have compassion for that person who's holding a gun at your child's, you will become creative. That innate intelligence will arise and you will be able to handle that situation so profitably that nothing will be hurt. Compassion, loving kindness, mindfulness, equanimity, non-reaction, wise attention, all those things. A part of spiritual intelligence that we were talking about the other day. And it's all a matter of living an extraordinary life. If you want to become extraordinary, if you want to pursue excellence, then we have to think about how to handle that situation, that person with gunpoint, without creating any harm or violence. Then that's real creativity, real excellence. Real leadership. And it's called supramundane leadership. Right, great. Thanks.